This is The Pulse, your source of insights, opinions, and pro tips about life running a field service or contracting business. The Pulse is hosted by Field Pulse's head of marketing and amateur satirist, Dennis Bierman. Without further ado, The Pulse.
What's up, contractors, tradies, service business operators, and anyone out in the field? As you just heard from our fabulous friend and partner in Oz, Samantha, she graciously provided us with some clutch MC work on the intro there. Not bad. Big ups to my friends and the British band New Master Sounds with the intro beat there. It's the best vintage sound around, if you ask me. So what we're trying to do here is give our friends and bros a voice. I'm the marketing guy at Field Pulse. With any luck, our marketing will not sound like this 18 months from now. So our business, Field Pulse. We're field service management software. Go to fieldpulse.com to have a look-see if you want to make running your business easier. Today, we bring you my conversation with a guy named Donnie Paul, proprietor of Pro 2 Appliance in Northeast Tennessee. He's going to tell us in his warm and friendly way some of the lessons he's learned as he built his appliance repair business. So here it is, the one and only Donnie Paul. Tell me a little bit about your business. So how did you get into the business?
So going back like high school, I was in a church where, kind of funny, the pastor of the church and what the head deacon, they both own appliance repair companies, and they were competitors, yet they worked so well in the church. And so in high school, I had the opportunity to work with them after school and during the summers, and just kind of realized then I liked working with my hands first and foremost, and just kind of started understanding the technical and mechanical side of, you know, the appliance industry. And that's kind of what got me started way back when.
So in the early years, did you feel prepared to be a business owner? Or, you know, you obviously had some chops, but tell me about the business ownership side and what it felt like early on.
Yeah, so right after high school, I actually went to the Fire Academy. And during the Fire Academy, I was recruited by Homeland Security. And I worked there for 10 years. And through Homeland, through the Fire, you know, we're a very structured organization. So for me, that's all I had known. So when I come back home and decided to start my own company, you know, I set everything up, you know, in that same style structure. And so it made it easy for me to follow along some of the same guidelines.
Did you know anything about, you know, accounting or bookkeeping or invoicing or anything like that?
Zero. And that's where I struggled the most. Billing and, you know, staff and things like that, you know, as far as the financial side of things, I was absolutely clueless, and I struggled with that for a long time.
And how about the customer angle? You know, going out, getting customers, introducing yourself, winning business. Did that come naturally to you? You said you participated at church, so I imagine you're a pretty personable guy.
Yeah, you know, I'd like to say I've always been a people person. And so I've never really had an issue having a conversation with someone. But, you know, getting out there and actually finding the customers, that was a little tough at first. So the avenue that I chose to go, I actually started out as a warranty servicer for a major appliance manufacturer. And that got me in the homes that way, doing warranty work. And after I got one certification, then I got another and so forth and so forth. And the biggest impact that I've had was through that, I started doing work for the, you know, the big box stores, going in their stores, fixing things that was returned. Yep. Hit it off with the salespeople, the managers, and, you know, to this day, you know, I get most of my non-warranty referrals through the box stores.
No kidding. How about, you know, online? There's a lot of the, you know, the conventional wisdom says that people are going online to find their service providers. Have you had any luck with that?
And they are. We actually, so I'm a little slow in the game in that. And so actually the, you know, all the awesome staff at Field Pulse, they're working right now to help me get my website up and going. I'm going to be doing it through Field Pulse, and they're going to be helping me with that because I've put it off, you know, for as long as I can. But we're getting to a point now where multiple times a week, people, you know, when I get to their homes, you know, they're like, they're wanting to know about me, ask questions. How long have I been in business? They're like, we've never heard of you before. You know, we got online and looked and we couldn't find you nowhere. And so to them, if they can't find me online, they don't consider me as a credible business. And so when that started happening on a regular basis, that's when I reached out to the awesome staff at Field Pulse and said, all right, guys, we've got to get me, you know, online.
Nice. And back to those early days, if you were to look back and say, wow, I got lucky, I did that right, or wow, if I had to do it all over again, I'd do this differently. What would be some of those things?
Starting out, I probably wouldn't have been so conservative. I would have probably taken more risk, honestly, especially at an early age, you know, because you can bounce back a little easier. That taking more risk, because I found myself later on doing more business than what I could actually keep up with. And I was starting to struggle because more was coming in than what I could actually do. I did not seek out good staff from the start, you know, and that hurt me in the long run when I really needed, you know, more technicians. I didn't invest early on in trying to train people because, you know, it was nerve-wracking. Oh my gosh, how am I going to pay these people? And you know, now being several years later, I'm like, oh my goodness, I would be in a whole different level if I would have, you know, brought people on board. I would have done that. That's a huge thing I would have done different. Second thing, you know, I would have reached out to more folks in the financial world, you know, hey, you know, what's the right way to do things instead of just doing, you know, what I thought was going to be good for me. So, cause I've had to change things multiple times over the past several years. And so I would like to have had a better foundation with that.
Very good. Is there a right time or a wrong time to begin automating things with software? Like, is there a right time to start doing QuickBooks, or is there a right time to start using job management software like Field Pulse? What would you advise your peers getting started on that?
Yeah, right off the bat. So I could not believe how simple Field Pulse made my day-to-day life. You know, when I jumped on board with them and started learning how to use the software, because the software is massive, they offer so much. And you know, honestly, you know, for the price point, I was just like, oh my gosh, how are these guys doing this? And they have made my life so much easier. They've literally shaved time off of my workload every day, by, you know, their automated systems and what I've been able to do now with my customer management. Absolutely in love. I'm a fanboy of Field Pulse, that is for sure.
Field Pulse so has a fanboy.
Right. So I would tell people, don't put it off, you know. I was a, you know, pen and paper type guy for so long, and you know, and being able to do this, it's made me more efficient in what I've been doing, and it's allowed me to have, you know, most important thing, a better relationship with my customer.
Very good. So with the customer experience, you know, sometimes your techs are there, you're not there. How do you manage that experience? How do you ensure that your customers have a good one, no matter who the tech is or what the job is.
So, you know, and that goes back to, you know, we try to be very down-to-earth people. When I first got into this, you know, I thought I was going to, you know, have my SOPs in line and, you know, and this is what we're going to do on every single call. And you know, what I found out really quick, you can't. Every customer is different. And you have to be able to incorporate that, you know, with your service, with your client. So, but we have to be good to people. You know, we have to be good. We have to take the time to listen to what issues they're having and really focus, you know, on the customer. And so, you know, we do that. We communicate with our customers. We listen to them. We ask, you know, questions over and over again. And that has really propelled us, you know, to where we're at today. We are strictly in my area, you know, word of mouth, you know, advertising is our top tier, and we've been very blessed with that. But it's because we take time to actually communicate and listen to our customers, you know, and what they need. And we don't treat them just like a number, you know, that's my 8 to 10 time slot today. No, you know, that's a person, and I'm going to spend how much time I need to spend in their home.
Sure. And how about, you know, one of the raps on our industry is that it's not densely populated with extroverts. So what happens when you have a tech who maybe is a bit brusque or isn't the most personable guy in the world? How do you keep a customer happy with a guy who might only say three words all afternoon?
So the three words that he says needs to be, you know, very well thought out. The biggest thing, honestly, is information. If you go into a customer's home and you know what you're talking about, you're good at your job. You know, unfortunately, my problem is I'll take, you know, 10 minutes to explain something because I just like talking, right? And so, yeah. But then I have guys that walk in and say, this is what we done because da 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 da. And you know, as long as you know what you're talking about and the customer is confident and that you know what you're talking about, then that eases a lot of issues right there. Especially in our area. If you don't, if you don't have really a clue what's going on, what you're talking about, and you start doing guessing this and guessing that, the customer will eat you up in a heartbeat. And so you've got to know what you're doing before you go in the home. And that's the biggest thing with us. You know, our techs, they ride, you know, along with us for a year before they go out onto the road on their own. And so that way they know the stuff, but we want our customers to be treated a certain way. And so that's honestly what a lot of our training is how we take care of, you know, our clients.
Gotcha. So for those breaking into the business as owners, as owner operators, walk me through some of the business metrics that you follow on a daily basis or on a monthly basis. Like, what numbers are you looking at? What reports are you pulling that help you know how you're doing, where to focus on your business, what to improve, or what's going well?
Yeah, so one of the big things where we're a warranty service company, we monitor, number one, what's warranty, what's non-warranty. And, you know, the warranty stuff, obviously, that's easy to keep up with because it's coming from the manufacturer directly. But the non-warranty, you know, when those customers are calling, you know, we're asking, you know, how did you hear about us? And, you know, and we actually, and that's honestly one of the best features that I love with Field Pulse is when we're setting up that customer's profile in the system, you know, we have a place to put, you know, notes like that. And so then, you know, Field Pulse gives us the ability to actually track that. You know, if I'm wanting to see how many calls we got this month from a box store, I can go in and search that and actually see what those numbers are. And so that helps me, like, okay, I need to focus more, on this avenue to get those numbers up. And so as far as like the non-warranty stuff, being able to put those notes and stuff in Field Pulse on the customer's profile, that really helps when we're looking stuff up. You know, so for us, we're really just monitoring what's warranty, what's non-warranty. That's going to change. The ability with Field Pulse, when they get our website set up and we get going, you know, we're going to be able to track, you know, the web data, because people are going to be able to schedule service calls that way. And so we're looking forward to that next step in our business career here.
Absolutely. How about, how about in terms of things like margins and pricing on non-warranty work? What's your strategy about that? How do you know what prices to set? What are good prices? When you're pushing the margins, I assume for parts and things like markup, those are all considerations. So how do you figure out how to do that?
Yeah, so we're fortunate in this area to, you know, we're in a smaller town, so there's only a handful of companies doing, you know, what we do. And I'll just be honest with you, when I first went in, I called these people. Hey, you know, what are you guys charging and why? And, you know, and we based off, you know, our yearly, you know, what's insurance monthly, you know, what's the cost of fuel, you know, we've done all that. And I'll be honest with you, you've got to do that to a certain point. But, you know, I've also talked to guys that monitor so much stuff that I almost think it becomes pointless, you know, to a certain point. And so obviously we have to make sure that, you know, we're covering our operating cost, right? So, but starting out, I asked, hey, what are you charging? And I literally split the middle right between who the lowest was and who the highest was. And that's where I picked my number. And, you know, we've been fortunate that we haven't had any spikes in, you know, cost and things like that. So we've actually not changed our service fee for like the past 5 years. And so, and that seems to be a good number, you know, because we're not an hourly rate company. And so, and that's one big factor right there, charging a flat rate. You really have to watch that, because is there calls that I'm in and out in 10 minutes? Yes. Has there been calls I've spent 10 hours on? Yes. And so, you know, those have to balance out. And so we really watch that, you know, going back to what you asked earlier about matrix and stuff, you know, when that customer calls in, we have a series of questions that we ask. That way we kind of can gauge, you know, how much time we're going to spend in their home. And so we've been able to keep that stuff down. And, but you know, that's kind of where we're at on that. In the industry we're in, as far as product and stuff like that, you know, the manufacturers have their suggested retail. And so, you know, we simply just do the suggested retail and, you know, whatever the tax is on that stuff.
There's a lot of discussion out there about the importance of upselling. How important is upselling to your business?
Very. And I'll give you an example. When we're in a customer's home, you know, just like anything, you have to sell yourself, because that's where you make your money. They call you back. One of the best things we've done is our business cards. We kept them business card size, but we made them magnets. You know, so when I'm in that customer's home, like, hey, if you ever need me again, here I am. Stick it on the refrigerator or whatever appliance you're working on. That gives that business card a home at this point. And so when we're in the home, we make sure we know that all the customer needs are met. But we also, you know, we're working on a washer and dryer, you know, like, hey guys, we have a maintenance plan. And so we can come in bi-yearly, yearly, whatever suits your needs. And we can perform these maintenance on your appliances. And I just did a job last week where, you know, a customer actually took us up on it. Yeah, do the maintenance, washer and dryer. Well, while we were there, we found that when his home was built, they didn't actually run the ductwork for his dryer actually through the house. They literally stuck the hose in the wall. So, you know, the past 3 years, this guy's been living there. His dryer's been venting inside his wall in his house. And so, you know, if we hadn't have talked about our maintenance package when we were there months ago working on a different appliance, you know, who knows how long that would have went on like that. And so, and that was also a fire hazard, you know, sure. And so we were able to catch that just by upselling our, you know, our preventative maintenance. And so, and stuff like that happens all the time, but going back to, you know, if you sell yourself in the customer's home, once again, going back to what I was talking about, being confident in what you're talking about, then, you know, these folks are going to recommend you to their friends and family, and you're really going to do well doing that. So, you know, we always got to sell ourselves in there because, you know, we don't want to sell ourselves short. You wouldn't believe how many times we go into a home, you know, and we're there working on the refrigerator. And while we're there, like, hey, do you guys work on dishwashers too? And, you know, there for the longest time, that always caught me off guard because I'm like, you know, our name is appliance repair. And so, but, you know, folks just don't put the two and two together. So making sure that your customers know what services you offer when they're in the home will make all the difference.
Absolutely. And you've done such a great job managing your business's reputation. So talk to me about some of your tactics there. Do you ask for a positive review online every visit? Do you kind of just count on them to do it if they did a good job? But, you know, talk to me about some of your policies and practices there.
So we don't. We try to make sure every customer is taken care of. One big thing we do, we don't rush the service call. We take our time. We sit around the kitchen table. We stand in the driveway. You know, we make a connection with the customer. That's what we want to do before we leave. If we make a good connection with the client, then we know they're going to call us back if they need something. We know that they're going to refer us to their neighbors, and it happens all the time. I've literally scheduled calls with neighbors, you know, that have been regular clients of ours forever because one introduced me to the other. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we spend time with the customers. One thing that I did change several years ago, you know, when I first started out, it's like, you got to do as many calls a day as you can. And, you know, I come to realize, you know, as I got older in the business that, you know, the old saying is true, quality over quantity. And, you know, that was a huge change for us. And, you know, with our technicians and stuff, of course, each technician we know can do more than other technicians. And so we also gauge that when we make the technician schedules, because we don't want to rush being in the customer's home. And so we, you know, we want to make sure that they're completely taken care of. And so, you know, as far as asking for reviews and stuff like that, those come, you know, with doing a good job. And so if we make sure that myself and our technicians are doing what they're supposed to do, you know, those good reviews come.
Absolutely. Let's shift gears and talk a little bit about receivables management and invoicing. So one of the toughest things for someone who wasn't a business owner and now is to do is ask for money from customers. It seems like natural, you know, like a natural thing. I did this for you. You should be paying me. But it's a difficult thing to do. So as a new business owner and now as an experienced business owner, how do you manage receivables in a way where, you know, you don't have to get contentious or weird? Because let's face it, some people have trouble paying. Some people don't want to pay, no matter how good the job is. Hopefully that's a low number of people. But talk me through your experience with receivables and receivable management.
Yeah, so that goes back, plays a huge part with why we choose to charge how and what we charge. That way, when a customer calls in, part of the conversation is it cost us X amount of dollars to come out, you know? And so we,
and you
know, we
say
that
to them right up front. You say, here's the cost of us coming out.
Yeah. So we actually have that conversation when we're scheduling the call. It costs this plus the cost of parts for us to come to your home. You know, because we do majority service work. Okay. And so when we're in the home, the customer already knows that there's going to be, you know, a cost involved. And so, you know, we obviously through Field Pulse, you know, when we were able to start taking and processing credit cards, that helped a lot, you know. And so now obviously cash, check, credit, when the customers have the option to choose which form of payment, that makes it a whole lot easier. And because we invoice when we're in the home, when the job's done, we invoice in the home as far as our service work. Now, when we do bigger jobs where we actually do, you know, estimates, that's a little bit different. The customer can pay, you know, on the estimate after the job's done. But we don't actually bill people, you know, but I'm in a service industry, you know, so I'm in your house for an hour, you know, working on something, and then, you know, then we're off to our next client. So we actually bill in the home. And like I said, another great thing about Field Pulse, you know, their card management, they took us to a whole new level when we were able to start doing that. And so we're getting to a point where I think we're going to start like cutting out the whole checks thing. For whatever reason, I've been doing this for a long time. And in 2020, we've had like 3 return checks, you know, and really? So, yeah. And I don't know what's changed there. So we're monitoring that now, you know, and our technicians, you know, they have the freedom to make a decision, you know, the type of home they're in. And if they don't feel right about something, then, you know, as far as the checks and stuff like that go, that's up to the technician's discretion.
Gotcha. That's interesting. 3 return checks. I wonder what that's, that's foreshadowing.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time and I've never had one before up until this year. Interesting. So we are really, that's something we're starting to talk about in the office. Are we going to go to strictly cash, credit, debit card? You know, are we going to continue to take a personal check? You know, the area we live in, we're such a small area, tight-knit community that, you know, it's just always been an honor system here. And if that's starting to change, we're going to have to, you know, change our outlook on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So the coronavirus outbreak and the crisis here. So interesting times for guys like you. How are you managing through it? What's different? What's changed? What do you think we'll recover from? What do you think's here to stay? Tell me what you're seeing.
Yeah, so it's a lot of crazy out there right now. And we actually got word today that 2 of our bordering counties are now going to issue the whole stay at home and the whole essential travel thing. So, you know, the past 3 weeks, our call volume has actually kind of went up a little bit. You know, simply because people are at home now, they don't actually have to take off work for the refrigerator guy to come out. So, but, you know, going back to what we're talking about at the beginning, us being a factory technician, you know, these manufacturers have issued our company, you know, the essential travel letters that everybody's getting, you know, because for the fact of refrigeration, keeping people's food safe. And also, you know, people don't think about it, but their washing machines, you know, keeping clothes clean and sanitized and things like that. So we're continuing to work. And we've actually been asked that question a lot. What are you guys doing different now? And the answer is, and it kind of catches a lot of people off guard, we're not doing anything different. We already had, you know, set of guidelines in place that, you know, when we go into a customer's home, we were already wearing, you know, protective equipment, you know, as far as our shoes and boots and things like that. But we also, you know, we've always wore gloves when we're working on someone's product. We've washed our hands, you know, like refrigerators, for example. We go into a customer's home, we'll wash our hands, glove up, work on their product. And then when we're done, you know, we dispose of our gloves, wash our hands again, you know, while we're in the customer's home, you know, because we're sticking, our hands in their product. So we've always done that, but all of our vans actually have wash stations inside of them. And, every single call, do we go into some homes that are, is not as clean as others every day? And so, the health and safety of, our employees is the most important thing to us. So, for years already with the wash stations, we were scrubbing up and stuff, after leaving people's homes anyway. So, this isn't anything new to us. We've already been taking these precautions. I will say one thing, obviously the mask and stuff now, we've kept respirators and mask stuff in our van, for when we're doing work where we're drilling or cutting, as far as dust particles. And we have added, masks just simply when we go into the people's homes now. We do ask a series of questions before we go into the home. And, if we don't like the answers we're getting or the customer refuses to answer, then, we will not perform that service call. But with the exception of adding the mask, we've not really changed anything because, like I said, every single call we were scrubbing up when we were done anyway. It's service work. It's dirty work. And so, we already had a handle on that. And, like I said, we have added the mask. And let me tell you, they are a nightmare to work with. So when you're trying to work with this stuff on, it's fun. It's fun. So.
Well, that's great. That's some frontline hero stuff there. So everybody at Field Pulse obviously thanks you. And the rest of the country should too, man. You guys are the ones keeping us going through all this.
We're very happy and blessed to be in an industry where we can still work. So, there's a lot of people that do not have that ability right now. And so we are very fortunate to be able to still be out on the road and taking care of our clients.
That's terrific. Well, I'm sure we're going to hear a lot from you in the future. Donnie, thanks so much for being part of this very first Pulse podcast. So thanks for your time.
Oh, the pleasure was mine. Thank you.
Don't know about you, but I reckon that was a job well done, mate. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and become an Academy member at fieldpulse.com/academy. This is where you can get all sorts of free tips and tricks to be a better service business operator. Until next time, thanks for listening to The Pulse.